This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and thank you so much for tuning in to The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Julian Ng, and guest hosting with us this morning, Sharids Abdullah. Good morning, boys.
Good morning, Han.
Good morning.
All right, so here we are just a few hours away from a whole new year. A whole new year. And, you know, I'm brimming with optimism. How about you guys? I'm looking forward to 2019.
Yeah.
Okay, well, obviously,
I have a lot to look forward to.
Too early in the day.
It's too early to look forward to the new year. Well, obviously, my enthusiasm is not mirrored by my colleagues in the studio here. Well, hopefully, you guys are more enthusiastic about the topics that we'll be covering this hour between now and 7 a.m.
Yes, that's right. So over the weekend, Bersatu held its assembly, and one of the things that was spoken about is whether or not the UMNO DNA will be inherently dangerous for Bersatu's future.
All right, we'll consider that. And also, Julian, what else do we have?
And also, we got a story on Miniso. I don't know if you guys have shopped there. This is not a promo either. So a story on Miniso and the broader question of China's cultural copycats. And we're going to ask the question of whether copycats bother you.
All right, and right after this, we're going to talk about the very timely topic of New Year's resolutions. Do you believe in them? Do you have one firmed up already? Or do you think it's a
just
waste of time? All right. Let us know. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. You can be part of the conversation all morning long. Again, 018-789-8899. Or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay tuned. This is The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Eagles there with Peaceful, Easy Feeling. Hopefully you're feeling that peaceful, easy feeling on this final day of 2018 as we cross over into 2019. And thank you so much for tuning into The Morning Run this morning. Han and Julian, alongside guest host Sharids Abdullah, keeping you company all the way till 10 a.m. this morning. Time to make New Year's resolutions, or so we've been told, you know, come this time of the year, right? And long story short, I think for many of us, you know, it's safe to say that resolutions haven't really panned out the way we'd like them to, you know. Some might forego it within a week, some a few months, you know, if you're fortunate. So I think the question we have to ponder here on the eve of New Year's Day is whether or not there's a purpose or a meaningful role for resolutions. What have you guys experienced?
I mean, I have a to-do list every day and I can't even keep to that. So, you know, resolutions are a grander form of a to-do list. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that would not see any hope of it being kept to.
All right. What about you, Sharit?
Well, you know, as for me, it's been a while since I've had my to-do list, so I'm one step worse than Julian, it seems like it.
You just wing it.
Just wing it, you know, there's just so many things to juggle. But yeah, it's just how I perceive the new year. I mean, it just seems like for the past 10 years, New Year's is just another day, you know.
It's kind of like birthdays and, dare I say, Valentine's Day. And Christmas Day, Mother's Day, you know, I guess all these values should be held to every day, not just once a year.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay, sure. And I must say this from personal experience, right? I found that the most meaningful gains I've made in life or most meaningful experiences I've had weren't necessarily planned out or there wasn't a lot of forethought into it, right?
You're winging it as well.
Yeah, I'm winging it very much so. Like, you know, a lot of things that have happened in my life, you know, just came out of the blue. It wasn't something that really sought after or planned. And that's why, as a rule of thumb, I just don't plan. I have a to-do. I'm kind of in between you guys. So I have a to-do list on a daily or weekly basis, but I really don't do any medium to long-term planning here.
Yeah, and, you know, situation is so fluid these days, you know, and there's just so many things happening that is unexpected. And, you know, it just warrants you to just make changes every time.
Well, see, but here's the thing. Is that an excuse, though? You know, because if, let's say, you have a firm resolution, say you really want to improve your personal finances in 2019, get out of debt, or, you know, find the one or whatever it may be, right? And then you find all these excuses to not do it. Or it, I mean, that sounds a bit like an excuse there, Sharid.
It could be. But usually it comes from your, I guess, your heart or your gut, right? You feel that something is so important that you got to do it. And it doesn't really necessarily have to happen at the, on the first day of the year. It could happen anytime. Mm. But the thing is that research has shown that a lot of people don't do resolutions, and even few more actually stick to the resolutions. It's such a big mountain to move, right? But the same research has also shown that you need nudges. And these little nudges are things that push us towards framing our ideas, framing our the very ideas of ourselves, pushing us towards that idea about that, those kind of ideals about ourselves.
I like that behavioral economics reference there. Well done, Julian. You get 5 bonus points this morning. Sean.
From Minnesota or something.
You'll get used to it. Speaking about nudges, I think it's you know, in that some point in the year, you reach that breaking point, and it'll just, like you said, you know, it'll just force you to just reevaluate your plans. And again, probably instead of making one resolution for the new year, it turns out to be a few resolutions in a year.
All right. Well, you let us know what has been your experience with resolutions. Now, are you like, as the research that Julian suggested, now, are you like the 50% or so, 50% of Americans who made some sort of resolution, but the number who actually stick with it falls to about 14% on average. You know, or have you actually been successful in sticking to your resolutions? But, you know, as you kind of think about your responses and you want to send them in via WhatsApp or Twitter, let me just read this quote to you by Oscar Wilde in his book, The Picture of Dorian Gray, and I quote, "Good resolutions are useless attempts to interfere with scientific laws. Their origin is pure vanity. Their result is absolutely nil." Agree or disagree? 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899. That's our WhatsApp number, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Stay here right under the Morning Run on BFM 89.9. Wilco with Someone to Lose. You're tuning into The Morning Run right here on BFM 89.9. Han, Julian, and guest host Sharid's here, keeping you company all the way till 10 a.m. this morning. Let's now consider copycats, or what some might term fake goods. I'm looking at this article on the South China Morning Post, talking about how China's cultural copycats have taken over the world for some of these discount retailers, which may have names that are perhaps Japanese in sounding. That are Japanese sounding, but turns out they have plenty of their roots in China. So today we ask the question: do copycats bother you?
I'm also bothered by the question of whether this business format is exactly a kind of copycat as well, because we've seen like 50 cent stores everywhere, right? Dollar stores everywhere in the world, including America and the UK. Mm-hmm. But of course, the Japanese have taken the business model to a very much higher level. And in China itself, an idea like Miniso is an extension of, let's say, the Xiaomi idea, which itself an extension of the fake goods idea, right? Mm. So as consumers, I think we are very conflicted, because if the price is low enough, hey, would you buy an iPhone ripoff if it costs a few hundred bucks, right? You would, right? Unless it actually affects us, it wouldn't sit so well if there is some misappropriation of our heritage, our culture. Think cendol, nasi lemak. Is that Singaporean or Malaysian, right?
Well, Prada versus Plada, you know?
Well, okay. So, I mean, looking at this phenomenon, right? I don't necessarily see a conflict. In my mind, as long as it adds value to the consumer. And
so you don't mind Singapore appropriating that they own cendol or nasi lemak?
If they can make it better. right? So I think that's a huge caveat here. So if Miniso, is it? Am I pronouncing this correctly?
Yeah.
If Miniso or any of these other stores, I think it's Miniso and Mumuso.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, so if they, let's say, you know, copycat or copy this other business model, right? But then they're able to value add, be it either slash price. I mean, however you define value to the end consumer, right?
Okay.
Then I'm like, well, fair game.
That's where the challenge lies, right? Mm. What do you mean by making it better? Because,
right.
Xiaomi, is that better than the iPhone?
Well, yeah. So once again, you know, so if you can add value by offering similar features but not at that exorbitant price point, then many people, I mean, Xiaomi, I think, is set to leapfrog over Apple to become the world's second biggest smartphone maker. So I'm not alone in this year, right? I mean, I understand the segment in the market which craves its originality, but I think it only goes so far. At the end of the day, you know, price or value matters, and how you quantify that value, that is tremendously subjective. I get it, but I think that is the underlying factor.
I think Steve Wozniak would disagree with you, but that's a discussion for another day.
Yeah, but it just seems that everybody does not have that same sentimental attachment over things as we used to have back, you know, in those days. I used to remember holding something for much longer period of time in comparison today. And again, whether or not, if we're not going to hold those things for that long, should we pay exorbitant price? You know, and these are places where I think now it just seems to be functional and
I think today the
objectives.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think today the ideas are more like cultural, intellectual, emotional. For example, I remember a few years back as well, there were all these fights about champagne, caviar, tequila, right? Mm-hmm. These are locally endemic products, and the respective governments wanted to make sure that they had a copyright over the names of all those. Bordeaux, for instance, you can't call wines from Australia Bordeaux. You got to call it something else like Shiraz or Cabernet, right? And so we kind of feel it. Okay, pizzas, are they from America or are they from Italy, right? So we kind of feel it when there is a sort of appropriation of what in our heads we think is rightfully belong to us.
Yeah, but I think that those who hang on to those principles, you know, those purists, if I may use that term, they have to cede to the masses as well. And I think the masses are totally fine with eating pizza from one of these fast food retail chains with little regard on how authentic it is and whether it mirrors the authentic Italian pizza experience. No? So I think that value, once again, I think it overrides the authenticity. I'm not saying that the authenticity or the originality counts or not. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that the equation here, I think it's more lopsided towards, once again, good old value.
Yep, and maybe, you know, there is that distinction. Some of us may pick and choose as to what is it that, you know, we find that we, you know, those identity that we want to retain. There are some of those things where, you know, it just doesn't matter as much. And, you know, we're ready to just,
go with the
cheaper options.
Yeah, so it's not just identity that you retain, but I think it's identities that you can relate to as well. So if you relate, you know, if you're an Italian and you lay claim to, yeah, pizza is ours, then sure, I can see how those are fighting words if you present them with a deep dish pizza from Chicago with, you know, all the, monstrosities,
all the toppings.
Yeah, right? You know, it's an abomination to them. But again, for the rest of the world, it's like, meh, you know, it's tastier, so I'm good, I'm going with that.
Which is why I think the question that's being posed by this article is actually is flimsier, because how can you say that a business model or a business process is cultural, right? Those 50 cent shops were brought up by the Japanese to a higher level, but is there any appropriation when you copy a business model? I don't think so, right? But when you copy a product, then that's a different idea.
Mm. Right. Well, you know, then we get into the realm of intellectual property and what have you. But we want to hear what you have to say. So do these copycat models, be it for physical goods or services or business models, and does it bother you if you come across these copycats? Or do you use a more pragmatic approach or more realist approach like I do and say, well, as long as it adds more value to into my life, I'm game. Let us know, 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up to the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin, and taking us there is near with this song by called Oh Boy, right here on BFM 89.9. The Style Council there with Shout to the Top. You are tuned into The Morning Run here on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Cheng Han, with me, Julian Ng, and guest hosting with us, Sharids Abdullah. Now, you can be part of this conversation. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, later on in the show, we'll be looking at the front pages of the local dailies, and most of them are dedicating plenty of real estate on the front page to the recently concluded AGM for Bersatu. Now, we'll get into more specific themes later, but broadly speaking, what we have heard out of the AGM appears to mirror some of the things that the old UMNO or UMNO used to talk about as well. So, for example, the championing of the Bumi agenda, or the role of government contracts, the patronage system, etc. And it bears this eerily familiar theme compared to what we have heard in the past.
So 2.0.
Yeah, well, actually, it'd be 3.0.
That's true.
Yeah. So considering what we have heard over the weekend, now granted, it's still early days for this relatively nascent party, but still, what we are hearing may be somewhat disconcerting to the typical liberal mindset here in Malaysia. So, you know, I think this morning it's important to discuss whether or not the UMNO DNA risks being manifested in Bersatu. And is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, looking at the recent development that we've had, especially with the exodus of UMNO MPs, and now they are applying into joining Bersatu, and Bersatu has claimed that they wanted to do vetting. Again, whether or not Bersatu can live up to the expectation of New Malaysia, you need to live up that new aspirations that everything is about fair opportunities, is about meritocracy and so forth. There are some positive takeaways from the assembly. I mean, they are talking, again, we have to remember that Bersatu is a Bumiputra party, and they are trying to empower the Bumiputra group, and they are saying they're saying the right things, but there are some of those sentiments that still gives you the impression that UMNO is still, there's still a bit of UMNO in Bersatu.
Look, I mean, this is Malaysia Baru, right? You like to think that political parties can now move their platforms away from ones that are racially based and focus on other policies, socio-economic policies that are not based on race. But here you've got Bersatu that is unabashedly championing the Bumi agenda, saying they're the only ones that can do that.
Yeah, I think there is a very huge problem in the recent election results. First of all, Bersatu actually did very badly in the elections, right? They did not even pass that passing rate of getting the number of seats, lowest degree of victory among all the Pakatan Harapan allies. And secondly, the people who did not vote for PH, or rather the people who voted for UMNO, the Malays, and the majority of the Malays did not vote for Pakatan Harapan. So Bersatu now has found itself answering that question of whether a race-based party is relevant or not, and they've been put into that de facto position where they will just fill up that vacuum of championing the so-called Malay rights, right? So are we going to get out of this fix of being forever set in race-based policies?
Yeah, and looking at, well, the younger, it seems that the sentiment coming from the younger group, the Armada of Bersatu, is giving that impression that they do want to have equal or a fair platform for everyone in Malaysia to have to have that piece of pie. And so it's good to know that there are forces within Bersatu that are fighting for that. For that, for that right for every Malaysian to have fair opportunities.
So I think there is a very easy solution to this, but I guess our leaders are still harping on racial policies, and the solution is economic, right? It's like Miniso. If Miniso offers you, the best proposition, the best price proposition, you would actually buy the product. And if leaders go on an economic policy that benefits all. Like, for example, the poor, a redistributive social policy would make racial policies irrelevant,
right?
Because you're giving money back to everybody who needs it. And in that case, why would you need a racial policy?
Well, okay, well, that sounds great. And if I may say, Julian, idealistic, but given the political realities here in Malaysia, even in this day and age, even in this Malaysia Baru era, whatever Malaysia Baru means now, we saw these kinds of racial sentiments being stoked, not just with the temple riots, but also with the anti-ISIS rallies, right? That sentiment is still very much alive. How do you change that mindset to view these social economic policies purely in terms of, I mean, that exactly, just economic terms, as opposed to one that is filtered through the lens? Because for so long, segments of Malaysian society have viewed their status, their identity, through the racial lens first.
Yeah, but also that's a question of the leaders hijacking the agenda, right? Because the electoral system of the party's internal electoral machinery is very important. In UMNO, for example, the leaders are just kept there by the delegate system. And, it's so hard to even get nominations to challenge the top two posts. As we have seen in the past UMNO history, right, the top two posts were rarely ever challenged because they perhaps couldn't get the money to pay off, other people, new blood, for example, couldn't capture the votes of the delegates, right? And the same goes with DAP, right? Is the delegate system relevant for today, right? I don't know very much in detail about how DAP works, but I know that Tony Pua was voted out recently, and should Tony Pua be the kind of leader that should emerge and surface as a future leader of DAP, right? Because he's done quite a bit in the national scene. The same thing with the Labour Party in the UK. I mean, I guess they go through these very rigorous reforms, and they go through the crucible every few years just to come up with a system that nominates good leaders and put them up there.
So perhaps more Jacinda Ardern's, the New Zealand Prime Minister who rose through the ranks of her political party. Could we or should we see more of that here in Malaysia? Well, let us know what you think, about the perceived UMNO DNA creeping through within the ranks of Bersatu, and just broadly speaking about the political landscape among the, dynamics, let's call it that, the political dynamics within the Pakatan Harapan coalition entities there. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. Are you pleased with what you're seeing and hearing, or where can they right the wrongs, the perceived wrongs as you see it? 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Don't forget, in about half an hour or so from now, we'll take a deeper dive into how the newspapers are framing what came out of the AGM, Bersatu's AGM over the weekend. Stay tuned for that right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Morning Run. I'm Tan Cheng Hang, with me Julian Ng, and guest hosting with us, Sharids Abdullah. We're going to keep you company all the way till 10 a.m. this morning. Thank you so much for all of you who WhatsApped in. Now, you can be part of our conversation all morning long. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio as we count down the final hours of 2018. Thanks to KY Oho, who WhatsApped in offering his thoughts on New Malaysia. Earlier, we were talking about some of the broad themes that are coming out of the AGM for Bersatu over the weekend. And then we'll talk about how that ties in into this New Malaysia. KY Oho says, firstly, New Malaysia is an illusion. It does not exist yet because mental models haven't changed significantly. Secondly, Bersatu was founded and operates on the same model as other race-based legacy parties, so we should not be surprised if the party is same old, same old.
It's very interesting. I agree with the illusion part, but I think we still should have that ideal, right, of what the New Malaysia should be. And secondly, that second point is very interesting because We were the ones who voted in Mahathir, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now...
Well, speak for yourself there, buddy.
Well, when I say we, it's the collective we, yeah, yeah. Right? Not me personally, but we voted him, and that was being pitched to us as an idea that, you know, even in Mahathir's own words, he was an ex-dictator. We voted him, and now we find ourselves in a very disillusioned situation as a leader of the PPBM.
Mm. Yeah, and looking at this text from KY Ho, he's right. He hasn't changed significantly, but it has slightly changed. And I think that was that little nudge that we needed to have Pakatan Harapan to become part of the government. And, you know, the second point, it just really reflects on the political landscape that we still have, and it's, you know, it's still prominent that, you know, number of places are still.
Right. I mean, okay, obviously obviously May 9th, G14 was this catalyst or this expected catalyst, right, for this new Malaysia to set Malaysia on a new trajectory. But again, that is the ideal way of looking, or the idealist rather, I should say, the idealist way of looking at it, because as it stands, the new government or the government of the day has to battle with all these legacy issues, including what KY Ho is talking about. Changing the people's mindsets. I think that is still paramount before we can actually lay claim fully to a Malaysia that's completely baru. Well, no, keep those comments coming in. Also, earlier we're talking about, copycats and whether that bothers you. And we got a WhatsApp from Yasmin.
That's right. And she is saying that she started her career in the ad industry, and brand loyalty was something that was hammered into her consciousness. However, today, due to the mass amount of products available, she finds herself blindly brand loyal and not feeling so, you know, making her feel like a fool. And today, well, she says that I'm ruled by my wallet and my mind, whatever gives me the best value, which is quality, quantity, price, and depending on items. It's ethics.
Right. I mean, loyalty in today's day and age, you know, not just in a materialistic sense, but also look at politics, right? All this party hopping, etc. You know, whether or not loyalty actually has that much of a sway in today's day and age. Think about it. In previous generations, loyalty to your employer, loyalty to your spouses even. And then you look at the trends now where else divorce is so much more rampant. People switch jobs like every other year. Maybe it's someone in the room.
It's your last day today.
Very
right?
Sad.
So again, you know, how far does loyalty really go in this day and age? And obviously, retailers are finding that out themselves, and hence they're adapting their business models to suit these trends. And also, we got a WhatsApp in from Ro, who also commented on that same story there, Julian.
Okay, well...
Oh, okay.
Well, Shariz is...
Shariz, yeah. Go ahead.
So, Ro is saying that without sounding racially insensitive, the Japanese may sell a 5 ringgit product, but it remains of usable quality, something relatively immaterial to the Chinese item, which is simply about making a sale or profit. For an example, Taiwanese bicycle tubes generally outlast Chinese-made ones.
Well, that's a very broad brush right there.
Yeah, I don't know. I've shopped in Miniso before, and I must say that I'm a happy customer because, you know, you could get a pair of earphones for 25 ringgit or something like that, right?
Oh.
And it works. That thing works. And even if it's going to break down in the next year, in the next 1 or 2 years, you know that you're mentally prepared that you have bought into such a product. But in the short term, it fulfills a need.
Well, why not Daiso then? Because Daiso is like, I think, 5 ringgit 90.
Well, because you see, here's the strategy, right? Here's the business strategy. Is that Starbucks strategy of just being there, right? Every few yards you walk, you see a Starbucks, and therefore you pop in. Same thing with Miniso. It was on the ground floor of Starling Mall, whereas Daiso was on
upstairs,
some floor somewhere.
Well, time to work out those buttons there, Julian. Well, that should be your 2019 resolution. All right.
Which is what?
Work out. Anyways.
Working out, okay.
All right. Well, so again, you can be part of this conversation all morning long. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Okay, we've got the 7 a.m. news bulletin coming up, and taking us there is Johnny Cash with Ring of Fire right here on BFM 89.9. It's 5 minutes past 7 a.m. on this December 31st, the final day of 2018. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Morning Run. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Julian Ng. And we are going to look ahead to 2019. Now, we've got a slew of policies and measures that are set to take into effect tomorrow. Or, sorry, set to go into effect tomorrow. I kind of messed it up. It's set to go into effect and set to take effect tomorrow. Anyways, whatever it is, you know, here's a timely reminder, or just to give you a heads up about what's going to happen starting at midnight. So first things first, you've got the weekly float of fuel prices. So recall that the finance minister, YB Lim Guan Eng, had announced that fuel prices, and that includes RON 95, will be floated, set on a weekly basis starting January 1st. All right. And given the global trend in Brent futures that has been on this steep decline this quarter, you would like to think that it's only going to go lower. But how much lower, we'll hopefully find out later today.
Yep, and I think that this is going to set some tongues wagging about how petrol operators, petrol retailers would manage their inventory, because sometimes they would make losses and sometimes they would make gains depending on the up and down of the oil price. But right now, if it is a downtrend, they may actually make losses because they buy in advance and they're holding old stock, which are priced higher. So it's going to be interesting to see how the government manages that from a policy viewpoint. Should the government just allow a free-for-all of petrol prices so that market forces takes its role?
All right, so something to watch out for in the coming hours. Again, the return to the weekly float for fuel prices. Also, starting January 1st, there will be a freeze on toll hikes, and then also motorcycle tolls that will be abolished.
Yep, all toll hikes for all vehicle classes on 21 highways across the country will be frozen, along with the abolition of motorcycle tolls for the for a few places. The first Penang Bridge, the second Penang Bridge, and the second link to Johor. I guess the government is encouraging, is that government encouraging us to go into the islands,
right?
Or come out of it, whichever way you want to go. And this would cost the government about 1 billion ringgit. And last Friday, we were discussing, Han, of whether this 1 billion should go to toll companies or should go directly into the pockets of the B40 or the M40.
Right, now, because you have these toll rates that have been politicized and they factor hugely into the cost of living equation that weighs on so many minds here in Malaysia. And this is perhaps seen as a populist move. The government has to satiate some of these growing concerns over the rising cost of living. So not just fuel prices, also the freeze on toll hikes. Now also keep in mind, starting tomorrow, the minimum wage will be raised to 1,100 ringgit.
Yep, that comes from 1,050 ringgit monthly, so it's a 50 ringgit rise. I guess they can spend it on a few more days of rice,
Mama,
or something. I think the quantum here is it's not the real issue. I guess it's how fast minimum wage would keep up with actual cost of living, right? To ensure that workers who helped the economy so much get their fair share.
Right. I think Pakatan Harapan had initially aimed for 1,500 ringgit being the new minimum wage. They have asked for more time. They are saying that, well, that remains the goal, but they're going to need a few more years before they can slowly ramp it up so as not to shock the system and for employers and payrolls and whatnot. But nevertheless, it is a step towards that direction. 1,100 ringgit, that minimum wage kicks off tomorrow. Also, back to consumers here, we got to take note of the electricity rebate. Now, the government has allocated 80 million ringgit for monthly electricity bill rebates of 40 ringgit each. And this is for the 185,000 poor and hardcore poor households.
Yep, if you just do a very simple calculation of 80 million ringgit divided by 185,000 poor and hardcore poor households, which the government is allocating this to, it amounts to 432 ringgit per annum for these households. And imagine if 432 ringgit were put into the pockets of this household, would it change? Would it improve those households? They would be able to decide what they want to spend on rather than almost coupon-like system of forcing you to spend 40 ringgit a month on electricity. But that's what the government has done, 80 million ringgit monthly for electricity bill rebates of 40 ringgit each.
All right. Always here to help us consider the opportunity cost here, Julian. Okay, so not just the electricity rebate. I think part of the discussion that has come out since this announcement was that, well, again, this rebate is specifically for those households registered and verified under the e-kase system, so poor and hardcore poor. But then you've got the middle class who are also crying out for subsidies as well. But it turns out they might not be getting it next year. Moving on to services tax of imported services. Again, the Minister of Finance has said the government plans to impose a service tax on imported services, including online services, all starting tomorrow.
Yeah, this is another form of progressive tax, because if you are a household buying stuff online, especially from foreign markets, then you would be deemed as of the higher income bracket household, arguably speaking. Not all the time, but arguably speaking, you have enough money to buy stuff online. So perhaps the correct policy. But then compare this with a toll, right? A toll is also another progressive tax system, but you're freezing the toll, spending $1 billion on this, and trying to tax a very nascent and growing sector, which is the online sector. Put those two side by side. Which do you think is a better policy? I think that's the question that should be asked.
So when it comes to your monthly budget, you got to leave that little bit more room for your Spotify monthly subscriptions there.
Absolutely.
Again, keeping in mind that digital tax goes into effect tomorrow. Quick correction here. So the online services imported by consumers that would affect software, music, video, that is going to go into effect January 1st, 2020. My apologies. Not tomorrow, but 2020. Also, something to take note of tomorrow. So you've got the basic savings target by the EPF that has been raised from 228,000 ringgit to 240,000 ringgit. Essentially, the EPF is sending out this message. You are going to need to stash away more for your retirement if you want to live out a relatively sustainable lifestyle post-retirement.
Well, this is unfortunately not going to apply to a lot of people, because the EPF balances for the bulk of EPF members is way below this. And EPF have done many surveys saying that people on retirement would spend their money within a few years, right? So it's a very dire situation. A retirement crisis is at our doorstep. But EPF is right to raise that, at least that basic amount. And I think many people misunderstand that this is the money that EPF is going to put into your account. But that's not true, because this money comes from the members themselves, right?
Yeah.
It's just that you can't withdraw anything below the basic savings, which in this case would be raised to 240,000.
Yeah, so 240,000, that's what you need once you hit retirement age. At least that's the benchmark set by the EPF. All right, moving on to education. Hey, good news for those in Standard 1 through Standard 3. No
if
exams.
If you're listening in,
yeah.
All the Standard 1s out there.
Well, you know, if you're going to your preschool orientation or what have you, or parents, you know, listening right there, take notes. So starting from January 1st, primary school students from Standard 1 to Standard 3 will not be sitting for mid-year and final exams. What a paradigm shift here.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
huge.
Sure many of them would be jumping up and down in their cars right now, which they shouldn't do.
So stay seated, keep your seat belts buckled in. All right.
I think, Han, this is just sort of keeping in trend with developments in the world, right? Like that exams don't really do much to secure your future. And in fact, it just makes study so much less fun. You know, so if you want to capture the minds and imagination of the young ones, get rid of exams. I like this policy.
Yeah, so we were taking a cue off of our neighbors down south in Singapore. They announced back in late September no exams in P1 and P2, and their progress to be measured in other ways. So here in Malaysia, the exams, these so-called mid-year and final exams, will make way for continuous assessment, at least so says the Education Director General.
So they'll be going to school learning about civic consciousness and the environment, wearing black shoes, but without having to be tested on these things.
Right. So make of that what you will. Also, still in the education space, all donations to... I think institutions of higher learning, yeah, public institutions of higher learning, all donations to such institutions will be exempted.
Yeah, I think I've got nothing much to add to this. I think it's, education is very important, and we should get much more for the education. Like, for example, I'm going to say this again, the toll is a progressive tax. So $1 billion, should that be allocated to the education sector?
All right. Moving on to the health sector here. So this is a big one. The smoking ban will be coming into effect starting tomorrow. So customers will not be permitted to smoke in eateries. I think there has to be a 3-meter distance between the smoker and the area of the dining area where tables and chairs are set up.
And those caught breaching the ban would be facing a fine of 10,000, while eateries that fail to enforce this ban will be slapped with a fine of 2,500. How come the eateries have a much lower fine, 2,500, which means that if 10 people smoked in their establishment, their fine per head would be just 250 ringgit, right? But whereas for each guy who smoke or girl that smokes, 10,000 ringgit fine. Am I reading it wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that 2,500 ringgit is fine on the eateries is per offense. I'm not quite sure there. But what I will say is that I've noted some mama stalls that have already, even from last week, started enforcing this ban already.
No way.
Yeah, so you've seen like the workers there, telling people to stub out their cigarettes, even from last week. So that was quite surprising. And they would just point to the no smoking sign.
Yeah, I think that was a big hue and cry from not only smokers themselves, but from owners of mamak stalls and eateries as well, that this would be a big hit to their business because a huge percentage of their customers are smokers, right?
All right.
You could just go out to the mamak and you have a good smoke watching football or something.
All right, so those days firmly in the past. Real quick, over the weekend, you had the Minister of Finance reminding us on some adjustments to the stamp duties and RPGT taxes that will be imposed on the property sector starting tomorrow. Quite a few there. I'll let you guys make sure you just Google that up. So if you're in the market now, you're about to wrap up a deal or something, you might want to look up some of these measures. But real quick, let's end with this one, Julian. So Tabung Harapan, closes tomorrow. So today is your final day for making those contributions.
Yep, as of 26 December, it closed already. It broke the 200 million mark, which is barely enough to cover our $1 trillion debt.
Mm. Well, I think so far since Pakatan Harapan came into power, I checked on Bendigaru's websites. I think Malaysia as a whole has issued some 80 billion ringgit in debt since May, and that's according to Bendigaru numbers. Double check me, someone. All right, we're coming up to, it's 7:18 right now. In just a bit, we'll take a look at the front pages of the local papers. So stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.